show about hot takes other than hot, tasty pancakes. Come on in, roll up a spliff. Oh my goodness, these boys talk about Tokyo Drift. If this is your first time to the show, yeah, this movie has nothing to do with spliffs, but if this is your first time to the show, my name is Christian Cady. You're a super wacky host. So wacky. And I'm joined by my two favorite co-hosts.
Chris Conkling.
And Brian Dupree.
The boys are back. We're continuing our Fast and Furious month. Talking about Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Very exciting stuff. If this is your first time to the show, what do? Well, we theme our months. And in honor of the new F9, the ninth installation of the Fast and the Furious series, we are recapping some of the key highlights. A couple weeks ago, we did the original, the OG, the Fast and the Furious. And then last week, with special guest James Barnes, we talked about Fast 5. And this week, I am proud. I am exceedingly excited. I am without remorse introducing the topic for today, which is the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Ready, set,
go!
It's called drifting.
What do you mean, drift?
The cars are lighter. The tires are slick. When you drift, if you ain't out of control, you ain't in control.
Still need a dictionary?
On the other side of the world, on the wrong side of the law, a new style of racing rules the Tokyo underground.
How you guys get away with this?
And all the best drivers want in.
Who's a tourist?
Let me see what the kids got.
And let's race.
But when you live on the edge, anything can happen.
You came to the wrong place.
Now, in a place
that is from the trailer of the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Boy, do I gotta say, this out of all the Fast movies we talk about, this one has its own unique, special like theme song, and I'm here for it. It is
it's awesome.
It's pretty great. Fast Furious Tokyo Drift was released in 2006, and it was directed by Justin Lin, someone who's directed some of the best Fast and Furious films, quite a few of them. I think he has the record for the most, the director has directed the most of them. This is his introduction into the series, written by Chris Morgan, with a score by Brian Tyler. It was a budget of $85 million, and it grossed $159 million. And it stars Lucas Black as Sean Boswell. It stars a man who looks like he's 47 playing a 17-year-old.
Honestly.
That's how we're starting this. This is how we're starting this. With Bow Wow, a.k.a. Lil Bow Wow, as Twinkie, Sung Kang as Han Lu, Brian T as Takashi, Natalie Kelly as Neela, Sonny Chiba as Kamada. Just slamming cast here. What are we going to be talking about with Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift? Well, what's our history with this movie in particular? Non-spoiler thoughts. Then we're going to go into spoiler conversation, in case you haven't seen the film. So if you haven't seen it yet, the ears are safe for the first part. But once the bumper plays, we are going to be talking about some of our favorite moments, how this movie compares to others in the series, and our final thoughts. So it should be pretty cool. Talk about Tokyo Drift. Brian, had you seen this flick before?
I realized while rewatching this that I had seen it. I knew I remembered at least watching part of it in my childhood. I got to imagine it was relatively shortly after it had come out, but I didn't remember much at all. So this felt pretty much like a new experience, even though I remembered having seen it. And I actually watched it a second time with the commentary by Justin Lin, which is very rare for me, but I must say helped improve my appreciation for this movie. So excited to dig into it. And yeah, I think it kind of stands alone in some ways in terms of the movies we've watched so far.
I agree. Chris, this was the only Fast and Furious movie that you had seen before. So you got some more context for the series as a whole, where it came from, where it went, And you got to revisit it. So tell us about your experience with this movie, your first time seeing it.
Yeah, I saw this movie when it came out in theaters in 2006. It was the only Fast and the Furious movie that I had seen up until that point. And up until a few weeks ago, like Christian mentioned, was the only Fast and Furious movie I had seen after as well. I had never watched any of the other films in this franchise. And to Christian's point, you know, this film really does stand alone. And I think that's probably why it was so digestible when I saw it originally in 2006. I thought it was a fun movie in 2006 when I saw it. I was a junior in high school. Coming out of a Fast and the Furious movie, testosterone's kind of raging. You're like, let's race cars. But I'm also a huge fan of Japan as a country. Loyal listeners know that. So this movie, out of all of them, the three at that time that existed, this one appealed to me most. That's my history with the film.
Yeah, I had never seen this movie. There was at no point I saw this and I was like, oh, I have seen this. I don't think I've seen much, like any clips of this. So I was coming in completely fresh. So I have nothing but a fresh take. And what is that fresh take? Well, before we get to my fresh take, Brian, I'm curious of your thoughts of this rewatch of Tokyo Drift. You saw the fucking commentary, you overachiever. I had such a busy week. I tried to watch some special features on my phone because I'd bought it through the iTunes movie store that still exists. And it was bugged. And it like wouldn't play the special features mobily, which was a little disappointing.
Oh, man.
It's a little bummer.
Behind the scenes, like on YouTube or something. But I'm really excited that you watched the commentary. I actually am interested to take advantage of that. But tell us what your thoughts were of Tokyo Drift.
So Tokyo Drift is interesting because it's a, on some level, very silly movie, but not in the way that necessarily it starts progressing in the series where it leans into the silliness. There is a level of tongue-in-cheek to some degree, but I think this movie takes itself more seriously in some ways than the other movies. The commentary actually helped me appreciate more of what they did in this. I think where the movie shines is in the presentation of Tokyo itself and the underground groups and how they operate. Just showing the physical space and why drifting would be so obviously necessary for anyone who's trying to drive very quickly throughout this sort of area. So just Tokyo as a city. Apparently, this was largely shot in Tokyo. Some of it was with guerrilla filmmaking techniques. Supposedly, Justin Lin had two people on his crew arrested during the course of filming this movie because they didn't have permits sometimes because it's very difficult there. Our main character, it's almost like they needed a Paul Walker-ish guy for Han to become friends with. And it just is exactly that. He's just kind of this country bumpkin version of Paul Walker's character a bit, although a bit more of an outlaw maybe, in terms of obviously he's not a cop when we meet him. But yeah, the plot of this movie is like some of the weakest Fast and Furious stuff. And I think it's ultimately what makes the movie maybe mid to lower tier for the series for me. The blatant thing about objectification of women to a ridiculous degree and associating that with racing, it's just very silly and not great emotionally. With that being said, I think that's
also a through line for most of those early Fast and the Furious films. That's something that takes place in all of them. It's never so blatant
as to like women declare themselves as like a woman declares herself as a trophy, as a prize.
In the first one. Yeah.
It's literally.
Pretty insane. No, in this one.
In Tokyo Drift, in the first race.
Oh, the same thing happens in the Fast and the Furious as well. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's slightly different there because it's like the other woman that she's offering, well, right? That's what you're thinking of.
Well, the woman, in the first, I can't believe we're going to go to this. There is a difference. In the first one, the woman says like, you know, I'm going to give you one. Oh, excuse me, we're not allowed to say that word on this show. I forgot that.
It's been a long time.
I'm going to have to replace that with drifting sounds or something. Woman offers one of her boobies. Who is it? It's Ja Rule. Wins the race. And then he loses the race and she doesn't give him any boobies. No, she says it's boobies no matter if you win or lose. And she goes, but both boobies you get if you win. And he doesn't win. He don't get no boobies. This one is, who wins this race gets to claim me as their own. It's what occurs in Tokyo Drift.
Right.
Which is
at the very beginning.
So yeah, I think this plot-wise, it's a little bit ridiculous, but it's almost like pulpy in a way, like almost kind of old school noir a bit too. So I think, plot is some of the weakest stuff, but the practical driving here, it kind of shines. I'm not super into cars, so it's not the most exciting thing for me about these movies necessarily, but there are a couple genuinely really fun set pieces and super definitely things you hadn't seen previously in this series and things that you're surprised cars can actually do. Having listened to the commentary, there's very little CG done with the actual driving of cars. They had a lot of the top drifters in Tokyo driving for them, one of which actually does a cameo in the movie as well, the actual Drift King himself. There's a bunch of famous people from Tokyo in this movie.
DK? But,
yeah. Yes. the actual DK.
But, what's that stand for? Yeah. Donkey Kong?
Bing! I'll just say, all of these movies find a way, even with their kind of ridiculousness, to be really watchable and enjoyable on some level. Like, I watched this movie twice in the last week, and I think I liked it more on rewatch. So, I had a good time with this.
Indeed. Chris?
I agree with a lot of the points that Brian's making. This movie is very much still an early Fast and the Furious film. There are elements in this film that I didn't like from the first one. They're not as egregious. You know, the car talk isn't as... there isn't as much of it in this film as there is in the original Fast and the Furious. And like I mentioned earlier, I do have a bias for the film because it takes place in Japan. And I'm interested in the country. Lucas Black, as Brian said, is super cookie cutter. He's very much like a lesser Paul Walker in this film.
And Christian said it, but I think I looked it up because I'm like, this man has a receding hairline. He was like 25 plus years old and playing, what, a 17, 18-year-old?
Right, but that was happening frequently and still happens. You know, Tobey Maguire was in like his late 20s when he was in the first Spider-Man movie playing a teen.
I think so receding hairline, and as a podcast with three men... with
one of which definitely knows something about a receding hairline.
I think we all know at least some amount about a receding hairline. I'm the least of which. My hair looks amazing still. But
rub it in.
Really does.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I do have a bald spot. Anyway, I think if your main actor has a receding hairline, he cannot play a 17
high schooler.
Unless there's like a direct reference of why, like he has a like there's some sort of medical condition of why he's losing his hair so fast.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's horrific. Like, God bless all the people that experience, you know, premature hair loss. It's awful. Like, you know, but not when you're 17. It would be a talking point. It would be like a plot point.
Oh, in the extended cut, in Justin Lin's extended cut of Tokyo Drift, I'm pretty sure they call attention to it.
It'd be the first thing it makes Bow Wow sense contextually. Says. Bow Wow would be like, "Why the fuck you look 40?"
To that point, Bow Wow is entertaining in this film. I think this is one of the first times that I realized that he had dropped the Lil of Lil Bow Wow and started going as Bow Wow as he got older. But I would put this film, it's not quite as good as Fast Five, but I certainly enjoyed watching it more than the original Fast and the Furious. And even though I hadn't revisited it since 2006, there were a lot of elements that I remembered from watching it in theaters. And I have to admit, like, hearing the Teriyaki Boys theme song for the movie did make me a little nostalgic. I did used to listen to that song a lot in high school after seeing this movie. But yeah, this is just fun entertainment. Just like I said about the other films. It's popcorn entertainment. Like, what else?
Put it on the goddamn box. What do you want from these movies? Let's do it. What a quote. What can I say? It is engaging content.
No, I think honestly though, I mean we're comparing it now. I think the car stuff in this is as good or better than the first movie.
We could put on the back of the box. You can say Chris Conkin. Chris, God, why the fuck does that happen?
I'd buy that for $1. I'd buy that for
the quote on the back of the box.
Chris Conkling from
DVD
the Popaholics
out of the box
says,
"Take this Chris DVD Conkling out, put it in."
Oh my God. Chris Conkling from the Popaholics says, "Watchable." It's a good quote for the back of the box. There you go.
You can you can certainly watch
slap
it.
Slap it on.
All right. Where do I begin with Tokyo Drift? The title, I think, should be called The Fast and Furious. I'd put an ampersand, personally. But The Fast and Furious, : White Men Can't Drift. Because
this
film is all about a white man who, like... Can I just say, there's a whole lot of shit not working in this film. A lot of the script, the acting, the character development, it's not really there. But what does, like, good filmmaking look like? I think this film has it in spades. This movie moves with such energy and such confidence throughout the shots, and like as we go from the beginning of the film to getting into Tokyo and the shots there and the car racing and the drifting and all that stuff, like the introduction of characters, the set pieces, like it is made so well that, you know, if it had a better script, this could have been one of the best Fast and Furious movies, hands down, because of just the energy that the filmmaking brings. And I
agree as well.
It's like, clearly you watch this movie and you walk away going like, the directors and the DP, there's some hot shit.
But that also makes sense considering that Justin Lin has come back so many times to direct these movies. Like he has an artistic eye and he's good at what he does. It's just some of the surrounding elements aren't as good.
I think the producers looked around and said like, this is a terrible script, but man, is it very watchable, as Chris Conkley from the Popaholics has put it. I think there's so much, like, because I'm actively engaged in just the movement of the camera and like the smart decisions of what little character development there is. It's like, even in that opening scene, you see the mark of a great visual storyteller, because the movie starts off without even talking about Drift Kings or Tokyo, whatever. And we learn that this guy can't bank a turn to save his goddamn life. Like, he's got like the Ambi Turner from Zoolander problem. Like, he can't make, he keeps slamming into shit. That's what's happening. It also like leads to the ludicrous nature, no pun intended, for the Fast and Furious. I've made that joke seven times this month. He shows up and he's horrible. And in like, overly confident, doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like, I don't even know how to speak Asian or whatever, you know, and he's walking around Tokyo and you just get
wabaki.
This movie's premise is that there are people in his life, without spoiling it, that go, I see potential. And I'm like, what? What potential do you see in this main character? Main character's pretty trash, but the filmmaking's so good that by the end of it, man, am I behind all the silly shit that's happening. Even with what is probably, sorry, Lucas Black. It's just such a bad performance. It's such a bad performance that I had to look up where he was from, because I was like, what a terrible Southern accent.
It really is awful.
He's from fucking Alabama. He's,
no, yes, it's
so
genuine.
It's just real.
Yeah, he's
genuine.
That's a real accent. I think he's just a bad actor, or at least he's, he wasn't good then, because he's been in a lot of like, quote unquote, prestige.
There's
stuff.
A grin that he gives. I'm not going to spoil it.
Yes,
but there's a turn in grin that is masterful.
He has some moments that are good, but I mean, he was in Cold.
I know what you're talking about.
After this film, he was in. All right, before this film, he was in Jarhead. He was in Legion, 42. comes back in Furious 7, apparently in F9, so look forward to that. So like he's been in some stuff and he's got to have some chops, but how a man from Alabama comes off as an unbelievable hick is beyond me. So I think, and all the car stuff's really cool. I really do love out of all these people, Sung Kang's performance as Han. Han is so
endearing. Han is the best character of this whole franchise, in my opinion.
He's awesome. So
he is awesome.
So I learned something very great about this from Justin Lin. He was talking about how apparently Sung Kang has kind of like an oral fixation. I don't know if he's a smoker.
Oh, that explains
this is why
a lot.
He's always snacking or like drinking something in his scenes. It's just part of his deal.
But I love that they've taken that element and made it part of his character.
No, I think I texted you guys, but this was the introduction of Han casually eating constantly, and it's the greatest character thing that I've ever seen.
Very, very a la Brad Pitt in Moneyball. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but that man is snacking throughout. It's a good movie. I like it. There's a lot of redeeming qualities that make this very watchable. But I will say, by the end of it, I was very sick of drifting as a concept. There's Tokyo Drift.
That's fair.
Hot take. Tokyo Drift. Entirely too much drifting.
wow.
They still make it cool. There's still like some surprising things that happen. But there's like a scene with a bunch of cars that are going down a mountain that apparently no one has made it down, but they're just going down it in halfway through the movie casually.
That's one of the most absurd lines of the whole movie without getting into the specifics, but he's like, he's the only one who's made it down. He's like,
we just saw eight people do it in unison.
Are you kidding me right now? Yeah.
How is it a road?
Is it the same mountain though?
It's like there would just be mountains of cars, right? There'd just be cars, like, all the cars that can make it.
Mountains of wrecked cars at the bottom.
But there's a point where it becomes less impressive because there's a scene of like several cars drifting and it's like not an intense scene. It is like they're doing it effortlessly, which is kind of beautiful, but it's also takes away the danger that they've built up of drifting. So what can you say?
Christian, that's actually like one of my favorite moments of the film.
Yeah, and I think it's good in some context, but I think it pulls to why drifting as an art form is maybe overdone in Tokyo Drift. Maybe slightly too much Tokyo Drift. But yeah, I think it's saved by its energetic filmmaking and some of the performances.
Quote from Christian Cady, too much drifting.
Entirely too much drifting. Let's move on into spoilers for Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
No!
Which, by the way, we find out, this is a spoiler for like a future Fast and Furious, so skip ahead if you're like on this journey with us, but to my knowledge, we find out that the man who hits Han is Jason Statham, right? Isn't that like, that's not a spoiler for this movie, but...
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah, who is another character that's Shaw? Who's introduced...
He becomes Shaw,
yeah, he
right?
He becomes Shaw.
Yeah. Shaw's introduced in Fast and Furious 6 or 7 or something.
Yeah, but it's not Jason Statham in 6. He's played by a different guy in 6.
What? I'm so good.
I think it's the same character.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Fast and Furious, they do that as well.
It keeps surprising me. We are learning more. Like, the more I learn, the more Fast and Furious becomes too confusing. But yeah, apparently they somehow retcon that. And I knew that going in, and I was watching that scene. I'm like, we see like the dude get out of the car, kind of. It seems very silly that they try. It seems like a very silly accident.
Interesting.
By the way, that shot of Han dying is in the trailer. It's not, you don't see clearly that it's
really?
Han, but the shot of the car getting hit is like in the trailer.
See, the reason, but let me kind of defend that decision. The reason that was an okay decision at the time is because A, no one knew who Han was. He hadn't been in the Fast and the Furious franchise yet. This was his introduction. Mm. So like, it didn't matter. No, but there was no context within the trailer for what was happening, so they could get away with it at that time.
Sure. That's a good point. So let's talk about some of our favorite moments in this movie. Chris, we're going to start with you.
Yeah, the moment that you thought was silly, I really like the moment where all the cars are drifting around the mountain in the middle of the movie, and Neela is kind of explaining to Sean her past with drifting. It's, I mean, that portion I could probably do without the expository portion.
But it's very anime. It's almost anime because it's like a synchronous swimmer dance.
There's an anime called Initial D that was popular in like late 90s, early 2000s, and it's all about cars. And that it very much reminds me of that.
Wait,
but
it's
relaxing.
D? Is the D for drift?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
You mean like donkey?
Like, what does the D stand for? Donkey.
Like drift, like some air blowing through the air conditioning unit in my home, my trailer.
But I think just the visuals of that scene are relaxing, super relaxing. I could watch cars drift around Japanese landscapes probably for hours without all the dialogue. But yeah, I really enjoy that scene. And then, you know, like you guys have already been talking about, the film is shot so dynamically that you can kind of feel the cars moving around the turns, and that's something that I do really appreciate about the movie. But it's a fun movie. Like I said, I know that's super bland and generic, not a hot take. But what are you gonna do, Brian? What are some of your favorite moments of the film?
When this kicked off, aside from not believing any of these people are in high school.
Or real people that exist on planet Earth.
They're just like, yeah, high school caricatures, short film a bit. But recognizing Zachary Ty Bryan from Home Improvement was a huge throwback. I don't know if you guys recognized him, but I was like, oh my God, I haven't seen that guy.
Who is he?
He's the bully at the beginning of the film. And he played, yeah, like Brian said, he's one of Tim Allen's sons in Home Improvement.
Wow, okay.
He's the douchey blonde guy, yeah. Yep. So, but their race and the way that it just ends in the car being destroyed, it's a victory, but it's just like a preposterous, silly ending. I thought that was a solid race scene. I really liked that
one. The idea that the consequence for all these are like, we're kicking your son out of the town or whatever.
I know,
And his mom comes in, and you're like,
so many times because
mom comes in, and you're like, they're the same age. And she goes,
oh, this is his wife?
When she goes, this is, by the way, 2006. And like in the context of Fast and Furious, it's actually probably more in the future, right? Because they fucked the timeline up having to put this movie ahead. So it's probably 2010. And she's like, is it okay if I smoke in here? It's like, yeah, let me light your cigarette in the middle of this police station.
So this is actually funny because in the commentary, Justin Lin commented that the no smoking, there's a no smoking sign on the wall.
Okay.
And I guess it kept getting pulled further and further down until it was in the shot. And she actually asked if it's illegal to smoke, right? So it's like, it's not a policy, but then he lights the cigarette for her. Right. So it's like almost a visual gag.
It was one of the first of very many silly moments that we had in store for us.
Yes, I will say shortly after that scene, there's a transition from his mom telling him that he's being shipped off and him being on the plane. Mm-hmm. That's just masterful.
It's
effortless.
Amazing. Yeah. It's
legitimately
amazing.
I watched it
and I went like, this is brilliant, like composition.
I think there's a musical cue that happens too as they pull back out, but it's, yeah. Really, really. I thought that was excellent.
No, it really is. It's beyond it. I think it's masterful filmmaking that happens in the middle of this fucking silly ass movie. And it's so jarring because I'm like, that the fucking song is, there's like a great Japanese song playing, and just it's like shot on really grainy film. And it's like, this could be in this moment, this is like an indie art house, or not an art house movie, but like an indie fucking coming of age story that's occurring. And then,
and then he says, y'all got peanuts
y'all
here.
Y'all got peanuts here.
But yeah, so that transition was great. The parking garage where we see the Hulk van for the
first
time.
Dude, that Hulk car. Oh my God.
So awesome. But yeah, just showing the, you know, how they conserve space in Tokyo and how parking garages are built. It was very futuristic. I haven't really even seen something like that.
That is a great scene though, where like the cars are moving around the elevator, and every time a car comes into frame, you know, Lucas Black looks at Bow Wow and is like, huh?
Is that the
yeah,
one?
Yeah. Your car? And then the reveal of the whole car is so ridiculous, but obviously I like that car, but it's so funny.
Would you drive that car, Chris?
Oh, 100%. I wouldn't be married anymore, but yeah, I would drive that car. Mickey watched the movie with me, but that car was literally the only thing that I remembered about this movie, mostly. I was like, I remember there being a sick Hulk car in this film.
That sounds about right. Okay, last couple moments. Han, okay, retroactively, I've created a storyline for Han. So I assume that Gal Gadot's character, Giselle, came with him to Tokyo, mm-hmm. and she must have died tragically. And now Han just surrounds himself with models and only drives for the ladies. He is like the formerly in love. Now he's just the party animal who's unattached.
Similarly, I was thinking about like the chronology of how events are taking place. And in this movie, Han does not care about money at all. And it has to be because of Fast Five and the heist they pulled off in Fast Five.
His attitude in combination with one line that saves the entire chronology. And it's like the thing that you can pin it towards and shows that there was, there's more stuff towards the end that points to there was an idea that he was involved with Vin Diesel's character, right? So they did have some foresight. But the one line that sticks it to it, he goes, I have money. There's this like line of like, oh, right. I don't care. I'm like, how did you predict? Like, it works. It fucking somehow works.
It does work. Okay, so I knew I had a second favorite moment and I totally spaced on it, but Christian just reminded me of it. The moment at the very end of the movie when Bow Wow is talking to Sean and they're talking about how this guy wants to race him. He says he knows Han, like, will you race this guy? And then Bow Wow's like, he says Han was family. And then at that moment, you're like, it's fucking Dom.
Of course. Dom's the only one.
Dom's the only one that would mention family so often. And then it turns out to be Vin Diesel. You know, the first time I saw that scene in theaters, I was like, okay, I get it. Like, you know, Vin Diesel was in the first Fast and the Furious movie. And at that point in time, this was only his second appearance in the Fast and the Furious franchise because he wasn't in Too Fast, Too Furious. So it just makes so much more sense in hindsight. And now that they've like rearranged the chronology of the films, but it's such a fun moment. And for someone who didn't even like this franchise at the start of this month, I can't believe I was like, I love this stupid Easter egg moment for the Fast and the Furious franchise. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun.
You think
Han
knows,
was family.
You think Dom knows how to drift? I was really wanted to see that race. Just the same thing,
right?
Went through. He's just like slamming and everything. He's like,
huge learning
fuck,
curve.
I didn't know the corn was so.
No, he trained up before. We know Dom's prepared. Couple more favorite moments. Just seeing the drift at the end of the first race in Tokyo up the parking garage turn, which is, they actually did it. Justin Lin didn't think they were going to be able to, and the stunt driver's like, give me one shot at it. And incredibly just does it in one take. Unbelievable.
That's amazing.
I was watching going, is he being pulled up on the side? Is there some sort of like, are there actually like, are they just using smoke and there's a car under it? Because it's so tight. It's such a tight fucking turn. It is
insane.
That dude must have been the Drift King.
Yeah. Honestly, he must have. Yeah, it's obvious. That, I mentioned it, Han doing the donuts around. This was apparently a sequence that was imagined by a famous drifter, if not the Drift King himself. Also, obviously, practical. Just insane how close they were getting to the camera on those. You guys know, I love a good training montage. The montage into him winning the race. Maybe a little bit anticlimactic as far as races go, but I liked that whole thing and getting the famous the Drift King himself commenting on his improvement. It's like how bad he is originally, and then getting the approval of the guy that's watching. This is the cameo. I don't know if you guys remember who I'm talking about. The
is he
training
one of the,
area.
Is he one of the fishermen the Drift King?
That's sitting watching them on the docks.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that's talking. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, so getting his approval, you know, as he was going, was kind of a cool idea. Aside from that, the weaving out in and out of the cars in the last chase scene, mm-hmm. I thought was really good. Christian, you mentioned that there was too much drifting. This was one where I was like, okay, this is like really awesome, non-drifting based kind of car stuff. Sure. So yeah. I really enjoyed that.
I would have to say, in the context of the film, him being so bad at drifting, as I mentioned in the first scene, he's just hitting everything. And the way they develop his ability, although, again, it's ludicrous that like Han's like, yeah, I'll give you another car. You might be the worst drifter I've ever seen, but I like you, cowboy. You know, that
see a little O'Connor in you.
It's a little silly. But I do like that they take their time and they don't make the... It's a weird balance of making your character very like... one to be inspired to be like, but also needing to learn how to do a skill, and his overconfidence, you know, often gets him in trouble and stuff. So I really enjoy just the visual elements of him having to keep practicing and practicing, and Han telling him to do another. So that whole arc of him like building it up, and he ends up like incorporating his dad's car. That's all great. Speaking of his dad, the moment with the gun pointed. And it reveals, you know, there's like this standoff that happens, like a,
yeah.
And Lucas has the gun pointed at him by the bad drifter, and then it like pans over, and it's his dad with the gun. I laughed audibly out loud at. So that was a very enjoyable moment for me.
That's classic. Yeah, that's just classic plot device there.
I enjoyed the moment where. They're fighting about Bow Wow's getting bullied around by one of the bad guy's henchmen about a defective iPod that Bow Wow has sold him, and the resolution is he gives him and he's like, take mine. You know, he finds a non-violent way. It's kind of a point of character development. Like, he's trying not to get in trouble, trying to find an amicable way out. And then Bow Wow's response is, now everybody's gonna ask for a refund.
Yes. always on the hustle.
It was very good because it was like, oh, that's genuine, like, oh, that's a pretty good character moment right there. And then just to have Bao's response be so antithetical to what he was trying to do, it's very funny.
Completely ungrateful. Yeah.
And then just gonna point out anything with Sonny Chiba.
Yeah,
that's great.
Sonny Chiba, as fans of one of my favorite movies. Can you guys guess what movie focuses on Sonny Chiba that I really love?
True Romance.
True Romance. Sonny Chiba, an old martial art, old martial artist, a bunch of films there. He plays the like kingpin, right?
He's like head of the Yakuza.
He's excellent. He's so good. Reminds me of like the way he speaks with the same cadence as maybe American audiences would think of Ken Watanabe, who's been in a lot of Nolan films. He's mm-hmm. a Japanese guy from Nolan films, but he's just got that perfect, like, it's this perfect art of translating the cadence of Japanese into English that mm-hmm. he has. And it's excellent, and I'm not going to do it because I have nothing but respect. But the fact that like he brings this level of, you know, our main villain, Takashi, right? Brian T.
Takashi is the antagonist.
He's the antagonist, right? And like when he's in the presence of Kamada, you know, he changes completely to, you know,
he's more subservient.
He goes back into like kind of very old school Japanese respect, like mannerisms and stuff. And Kamada being able to command that around him, and the whole premise of the final thing being like, I propose a race, and it's very like, it's kind of like old school like Japanese samurai shit. Like, it's like, we're gonna duel respect, and just his like his acceptance of that being the way that things are gonna be handled, and he's just a very enjoyable part of it, and brings in like that old school Japanese kind of vibe to it. Makes it a very much more anime type of type of vibe throughout like what the plot is, because it's pretty silly being that he's like, you're a crime leader. But and like, I, you know, you could just kill me, but I challenge your nephew to a race. And he's like, it will be settled with a race. That sounds like a very good idea.
The plot dictates we settle this with a race.
Yeah.
I want to ask you guys, what did you think about the cell phone video thing that they did? I feel like at the time...
Are you ahead of its time and behind its time all in one?
It's interesting. I don't know. I can't think of how it would have played then. It was very interesting seeing that, because I thought it was actually pretty well done in a cool way to show that we can see the whole race and that everyone's able to see it at once. Functionally, it probably wouldn't have worked the way we saw it. But yeah, I thought that was kind of...
I will say this. In terms of technology, Japan has always been ahead of us in the cell phone industry. So, okay. I mean... It's plausible. Not in the United States,
I would say,
but like
network
in 2006, maybe integration in Japan. Yes.
As far as like integration and adoption of technology that integrates well. But let it be known that the iPhone is very popular in Japan.
It is. Now it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Designed in California,
but
Chris.
It wasn't in 2006, because I mean the iPhone didn't exist in
2006. No, it wasn't, but they have been paying at vending machines with their phones since that time. Like, at that time, they could pay for shit with vending machines, and we literally just got that shit. So yes, you are correct, I think, in that way. Yeah, Ryan, to your point, I think it is an interesting idea, and it kind of has the problem of the way that speed in the first Fast and Furious is translated with like the warping effect.
Yep.
It kind of uses a lot of techniques like that date it. But the idea of it is definitely there. That's why I say it's very much something that's ahead of its time, but also like visually a little bit behind.
Yeah, no, I agree. I watched it. I was like, oh, this was probably like, this probably hadn't been done like this prior, but looking at it today, it's kind of, dates it a bit.
I think enough can't be said just in closing about favorite moments of, although we're not fans of Lucas Black's performance in this, I do have to say the integration of him in Japanese culture is done really well. Like, I love all the moments of him interacting. It feels very genuine, very like culturally truthful to the like what kind of Americans would be in there. Like they mentioned like army brats and stuff. And just all the culture clashes and all that stuff, I think, is done excellently. And he's even down to his outfit. Like, he has like a traditional Japanese, he's wearing like a traditional like Japanese uniform to school. And I think all that stuff's like really fun.
Yeah, it's a, traditional fish out of water story.
Yep. Fish out of driftwood.
Nailed it.
Okay.
I'm having an off night, guys. Bear with me. Vin Diesel's in this movie.
Yeah, for about 10 seconds.
He's so polished. And he looks great.
You know exactly what he stands for. You know, he's like, I didn't know Han was into American Muscle. Was when he rolled with me. Whatever
oh my gosh.
Silly line is. Like, of course, yeah.
Just a little bit of me wanting to high five everybody that I exist with for a
year. Honestly, it's just spontaneous. Yeah. High five ability.
So much high fives. All right. In comparing this to the other films, is anything else stand out as noteworthy?
It really feels like the first movie in a lot of ways. You know, just because it's our first introduction to these characters, it feels really self-contained, and we lose what has become one of our main characters. And obviously, there's retconning and stuff that happens to bring him back, maybe. But yeah, I think that's why it kind of stands alone. And I don't know. There's not too much more to say that I haven't said in my initial comments. But I think this is very clearly a Fast and Furious movie. But so if you're in for it, you're in for it. But it's not top tier consistently.
I will say, in terms of like traditional storytelling, Tokyo Drift is most in line with the hero's journey out of any of the Fast and the Furious films.
This is a very good point, Chris. I think you're spot on.
And that's why I gravitate toward this movie, I think, and that's why I like it so much. We've talked about the monomyth here a bunch on the podcast, and you know how the story is just perpetuated over all of humanity's storytelling. But even in 2006, despite not knowing a lot about Han's character, because he's the mentor figure to Sean in the film, he's the Obi-Wan, you still feel for Sean when Han is killed, you know, supposedly. So yeah. That's still an emotional beat in the movie because it's part of the hero's journey. You know, Sean has to surpass his mentor and fulfill his destiny, which is to become an excellent drifter. You know, it's simple, but it really is classic storytelling. And that's definitely why I probably gravitated toward this film more than the other ones when I was younger.
Yeah, it's the most racing movie of all of them. It has the most racing, which is very interesting. It's a car movie about street racers. And this one feels like, I think, why it remains a fan favorite, people that have like gravitated towards the series, is that it's like the most one centralized on a type of street racing that has become very popular in the States. And I think for that, it remains very like interesting in its dedication to street racing lifestyle. I think even more so than The Fast and the Furious, which ultimately is a like a crime story involving characters that are in street racing, whereas this is about primarily a young street racer who goes to a different culture with a different way of street racing and then partakes in various street races. And the crime element really is more of a plot catalyst towards more racing. The only like action scene with guns is a chase, which is essentially a race. So a race with higher stakes. So
one extra
go
letter.
Figure. Heavy focus
I'm so
on
glad
racing.
You guys are here because I had nothing to say here, and you guys have just locked down like themes and exactly what this movie is perfectly. So I appreciate you.
So it is if racing is your thing, and that's what you get out of Fast and Furious movies, this one's got the most of it. And
this one has racing in space.
It didn't disappoint because there are moments like we talked about Fast Five, and there's a moment where the street racing culture is like the least right. It's just this like other element.
The scene in which they race the police cars in Fast Five seems like an addition to everything that we're already seeing in the film. It could be removed and nothing would be lost in the movie. Whereas, you know, racing in this film is a crucial aspect of what's taking place in the narrative.
Where it's like Fast Five breaks for 5 seconds to be like, yeah, Fast and Furious stuff is happening with like
cars
and women.
Remember when we used to do this stuff?
And even more so like when they're like, oh, let's race for pink slips, and it cuts to just Paul Walker winning the goddamn car. Like, you know, they don't even...
It's just understood. Yeah.
So if you saw that and you were frustrated that you didn't get to witness the race, boy, step a few movies back. This movie's got you covered because it shows every race. Mostly Japanese, though. All right.
Oh, man. It's late, guys.
It's very late.
Do you like racing?
Yeah.
And Walmart brand Paul Walker?
Yeah.
Do we have a movie for you?
Have I talked about how much I don't like Lucas Black's performance? I am excited to see him come back, though. I'm excited what the white Drift King, I believe they call him the White Tiger.
White Wolf?
The White Wolf. That's what I was trying to Any final thoughts on Tokyo Drift?
I think we covered it.
Good. That's what we do here.
These movies aren't super deep, but there are fun things to talk about. And if you haven't seen Tokyo Drift, this is one of my favorites. And I know I'm by no means someone to listen to in terms of like their opinions of this franchise. But I think this is one of the better Fast movies, and it's absolutely worth a watch.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's worth a watch. Like you said, I think you guys have said a lot of good things about conceptually how it's different from the other movies. But yeah, fish out of water story. Really, what I like about it, deep dive into this this racing culture. You know, that was some of what I liked most about the first movies, seeing this underground culture, how they, you know, what their hideouts look like, how they live in this in the spaces that they live in. It's doing all that on really interesting levels, and a bunch of awesome practical car races with impressive drifting techniques. So definitely would recommend it. I don't think I'm as hot on it as Chris.
I think it's we've made a lot of fun about titles in this series, a lot of stupid titles. And this one is probably the most accurate title to what the viewer is going to experience.
In Japan, it was actually called Tokyo Drifting Hairline. So sorry.
Ayo.
Oh, that's bad.
I missed the harmonica. Where's the harmonica?
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for Fast Furious Tokyo Drift. Chris, what the fuck are we talking about next week?
Christian, next week, we're moving forward in the chronology of the Fast and the Furious franchise, and we're going to be watching Furious 7.
Which means that I'm going to have to watch Fast and Furious 6, because I'm watching all of them, I guess, you know, so... It's not called Fast... It is Fast and Furious 6 is the sixth one. Titles.
Yes. I think that's right.
I think it's called Fast and Furious 6, Way Less Drift.
Christian, I'm interested to hear your takes on it. I had a good time with it. It was, they did a couple of fun little,
Is that the one with the runway?
It is the one with the runway.
Yeah, then I gotta rewatch it, because that's my favorite scene.
It's not on par with 5, but they do a couple of, like, referential turns, and, I was talking to Chris about it a little bit earlier, but, I think it'll be a fun rewatch.
Are they drifting those turns?
Not nearly as much drifting, so I think that'll be a pro.
Yeah. Too much drifting.
But there is lifting planes. I don't know. I'm sorry. It's late, guys.
Maybe not for the listener. If you're waking up to this, we're so sorry to, like, really...
be half asleep. I think we've done pretty good, all things considered.
Oh, Brian, I love your positivity. So that's going to do it for that. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up. More Fast and Furious coming at you, at least slow and curiously. Oh, fuck me.
moderately sped and consistently. I don't fucking know.
We'd all watch that series.
Where can people find more of our stuff on the internet?
Loyal listener, you can find me on Twitter at Chris Conkling, talking about all things nerdy.
And you can find me at True Papaholic.
You can find my band at Midnight Satire. Please follow and subscribe on all the streaming services and social media. New stuff coming out soon, I promise. All right, that's going to do it for the show. You can find, you can leave us a 5-star review. We appreciate it. You can bring super fun energy into our review section. We read those aloud on our weekly uploads. Our weekly uploads are wonderful episodes that we have that are now on YouTube as well. We talk about the latest news, what we've been consuming, and have some of the community feedback. To become part of that community feedback, again, rate us 5 stars and email us at popholicscast@gmail.com. You have any strong opinions on the Fast and Furious series? Oh, God. Popholicscast@gmail.com. We got to hear them. What's your...
I desperately want to hear your opinions.
Chris is...
Give us them all.
...drooling at the mouth more than the sweat that pours off of Dwayne The Rock Johnson's face during all the movies he's in. That's going to do it for this episode. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of...